Welcome to The GAC Files, a podcast about the people, issues, and ideas driving Global Affairs Canada.
Bienvenue au dossier d'AMC, un balado sur les gens, les enjeux et les idées qui animent Affaires mondiales Canada.
And now, introducing your host, Global Affairs Canada's Deputy Minister of International Trade, John Hannaford.
Et maintenant, voici votre animateur, John Hannaford, sous-ministre du Commerce international d'Affaires mondiales Canada.
Bonjour à tous. C'est un plaisir d'être votre hôte pour un autre dossier AMC. Je m'appelle John Hannaford et je suis le sous-ministre du Commerce international. Et comme j'ai dit, this is a forum that is important, I think, for us to discuss various issues that affect us as a community. And today we're very fortunate to have a colleague of long standing, Manon Dumas, who is taking a leadership role with respect to some of the cultural aspects pertaining to harassment and to difficult workplace situations as part of our team up here on the eighth floor. And she has been leading a series of conversations amongst members of the department, both LES and CBS in missions and here in headquarters, with a view to trying to facilitate conversations that aren't easy and to increase our sensitivity as an organization to situations that can be difficult and by virtue of being difficult are often extremely important to be addressing. So it's leadership work that is critically important to me and my colleagues in the deputy community, in part because it really can contribute to making this a better place to work. And that's ultimately our objective here, is to address situations that need to be addressed and to do it in a way that is constructive and allows for us to, as a community, kind of move forward on things that can be, as I say, challenging. But maybe given that this is the format of these podcasts, on peut commencer un peu avec certaines questions personnelles concernant votre histoire comme un individu, et peut-être on peut discuter un peu your past. You know, where are you from, Manon?
Absolument. Alors moi, j'ai grandi dans le nord de l'Ontario, oui. Une petite ville qui s'appelle Iroquois Falls, à peu près aux 750 kilomètres au nord de Ottawa. Et c'était c'est une ville où, bon, d'où la seule présence du gouvernement fédéral était le bureau de poste. Oui. Donc, l'idée de pouvoir imaginer une carrière aux affaires étrangères n'est pas venue de mon école. Par contre, il y avait quand même une certaine ouverture sur le monde. Mon père faisait partie du Club Rotary à Iroquois Falls et on a accueilli des étudiants d'échange de différents pays. Et c'est ça qui m'a donné le goût de commencer à voyager. Et j'ai moi-même fait un de ces échanges quand j'avais 17 ans. Je suis partie et je suis allée passer un an en Afrique du Sud. Donc, ma première fois à quitter les frontières canadiennes, je me suis rendue pour aller passer un an en Afrique du Sud. Et de là, j'ai découvert que s'il y avait moyen de jouer ce jeu comme carrière, j'aimerais faire ça. J'aimerais être un ambassadeur pour mon pays, parce que c'est un peu ça qui était l'expérience. Et c'est après ça, j'ai commencé à faire un peu de recherche sur quelles sortes d'études pourraient mener à quoi. Et c'est seulement à ce moment-là que j'ai commencé à comprendre la machine gouvernementale fédérale et qu'il y avait un ministère des Affaires étrangères. Voilà.
Et votre éducation, quels étaient les choix que
alors j'ai fait un bac. Pour moi, le bilinguisme a toujours été très important. J'en étais très consciente dans le nord de l'Ontario que pour pouvoir bien maintenir un niveau de bilinguisme, ça allait prendre un effort. Donc, et mon année en Afrique du Sud était complètement en anglais. C'était une immersion vraiment pour aller approfondir l'anglais. À la maison, j'avais toujours parlé français à la maison, mais les études...
Et à l'école aussi?
Alors, à l'école primaire, c'était en français. Mon école secondaire était bilingue. On avait une des seules dernières écoles bilingues public en Ontario, à Iroquois Falls. Et donc, je pouvais faire... on choisissait les cours selon les professeurs. Je prenais la physique. Je pouvais choisir le professeur, si je préférais le professeur anglophone ou le professeur francophone. Donc, et donc, après, je suis allée faire mon année en Afrique du Sud, juste avant la fin de mes études secondaires. Et puis après ça, j'ai décidé de faire mon bac en anglais à Queens. Mm-hmm. J'ai été chanceuse d'être acceptée à Queens. Mm-hmm. Et j'ai fait un bac en études politiques. Et suite à ça, j'ai appliqué à un nouveau programme de maîtrise en relations internationales qui existait à l'Université Laval à Québec. Alors, c'était tout nouveau à l'époque. Maintenant, on a plusieurs collègues du ministère qui se retrouvent ici, issus de ce programme. Mm-hmm. Et puis... j'étais parmi les premières, les premières classes, alors j'ai bien apprécié.
Et ça, c'était avec Yvon Bernier?
Il était là, effectivement. Il y avait Kido, Paul Pinchot, il y avait d'autres personnes. C'était pluridisciplinaire, donc à ses débuts, à l'université, ils avaient, à Laval, ils avaient plus ou moins regroupé des professeurs des différentes facultés de droit, de politique et d'économique pour faire un programme. Éventuellement, ils ont créé l'École des hautes études internationales aussi, mais au début, c'était juste un puzzle. On prenait des morceaux et on en a fait un programme. Ouais.
Et votre carrière ici
Alors après ça, c'était j'ai pris les chemins traditionnels, malgré que l'année où j'ai gradué de mon programme de maîtrise en relations internationales, l'exercice de recrutement, c'était à l'époque où il y en avait encore annuellement, mais l'exercice cette année-là était limité aux spécialistes en soit droit ou économie. Donc, je ne pouvais même pas m'inscrire. Donc, j'ai eu une année où je ne pouvais pas m'inscrire c'était mon rêve par ce temps-là de faire partie du ministère. Et puis, j'ai fait d'autres choses pendant cette année-là. J'ai travaillé un peu, fait de la suppléance dans des écoles. Et je suis allée aussi faire un programme d'études en art dramatique à New York. Parce que j'ai un petit côté artistique aussi. J'ai fait beaucoup de théâtre et je continue à en faire. Et donc, n'étant pas certaine que j'allais réussir à rentrer au ministère, je me suis dit, je vais aller me perdre à New York pendant un été, faire un programme de théâtre que j'ai adoré, évidemment. Mais j'y étais pas avec l'intention d'en faire une carrière, tandis que les autres, la plupart des gens qui étaient dans mon programme cherchaient ça. Alors, ça me semblait trop loin, cette idée de comment entrer dans cette industrie. Et je me trouvais déjà trop âgée. J'avais déjà 25 ans et dans ma tête, pour faire une carrière... de cinéma, il faut commencer à 17-18 ans. Voilà. C'est... the road not traveled.
But you found a way to sort of balance. You continue to be active in the arts, and that's... So you have actually found an équilibre entre les deux.
Absolument, absolument. And I found that, frankly, it's probably the best of both worlds, because if you do want to have a career in theater or cinema or television as an actor... You really have to slog it out and take whatever you can, do a lot of commercial work. Like, there's a lot of things where there's a little bit of money to be able to just live. So you're not necessarily stretching yourself as an artist with every project. You're just doing what it takes to stay alive. Whereas by not depending on it financially, I
would... It's a different experience.
Very much so, very much so. There's a whole debate to be had there about that industry, though, and also how jobs need to be protected, and how so the mixture of the amateur professional world for acting is also very interesting.
Right.
But in Ottawa, there's actually a very active theater community, and both professional
en français,
en anglais, effectivement, et du côté amateur comme professionnel. Oui. Et il y a un beau petit équilibre qui s'est trouvé, je trouve, entre les deux secteurs. Beaucoup de productions sont faites avec un mélange des deux. Alors, ça m'a permis aussi de faire des productions du côté un peu professionnel, sans être obligé de devenir syndiqué.
Oui, c'est excellent. Now, we worked together, we started working together, I guess, about 7 or 8 years ago, when I first joined the Privy Council office. You were already a veteran of PCO at that point. Which was a fascinating experience, at least for me, for any number of reasons, but not least because it was a very small community. Privy Council offices isn't that big a department, and our little piece of it, foreign and defense policy, was particularly small. It's around 25 people. And one of the things I've been struck by in coming back to GAC is just the scale of the department. And that is obviously one of our extraordinary strengths, is we have a network which is extraordinarily diverse, both in location and in background, and that's something that is really critical to us as we deal with the international files that we need to address. But it also, that presents a certain reality as we try to think about cultural aspects of our community. We have people, who are literally around the world, and you've been engaged recently in some very important work to deal with questions of harassment and workplace tensions. And I think, people would be interested just to hear about the nature of that exercise and some of the early results that you're seeing through the work that you've been doing.
Okay, so my part in this started with when I came back from a posting last September, and I had a few discussions in the summer previous with David Morrison, who was associate at the time, of course, and was playing a specific role in leading DM efforts to do more, to see what could be done to increase and strengthen our tools and processes and workplace culture. So I joined that effort in September, and it's a very broad topic, and it's one has to, sort of questions, well, where do you begin? Well, first of all, I wasn't having to begin because of there's a lot that's been going on and continues to go on. There's a lot of things happening on the formal side, of course. There's new federal legislation that has just recently been passed, which is being slowly implemented. Treasury Board's working on guidelines, and that helps us with formal processes for complaints and also more training and mechanisms. But what is obvious in all of this, and on the heels of the Me Too movement as well, which was one of the impetus for the DMs wanting to do a bit more, is that there is a moment, I think, in the world at the moment where we're saying, for ages we've been saying no means no, issues of consent, of power dynamics, but somehow we still are not talking enough about it. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the sexual harassment side, but that can also get extrapolated to general harassment, because so much of it, when it gets to complaints, when it gets to the extremes, then, and it's not always clear-cut even at that point, but there's so much behavior that we should be more mindful of before it ever gets there. Mm-hmm. And we're discovering constantly as human beings how, it's such a truism that everything's relative, we're not all the same, we don't perceive things the same way. It takes a lot of work on a daily basis for any individual to be constantly thinking about that, to be not only thinking about, being respectful, but the very definition of what does it mean to be respectful? Well, we're not all the same. We don't all perceive respect the same way. For some, respect means leave me alone, don't even talk to me. Mm-hmm. For others, respect means, take the extra time to smile and greet everyone. Well, there you go. Already you can have a little bit of a gray zone there where two individuals can suddenly start having a tension between them. And so all those gray zones is what we have to get a little bit better at talking about. Our department as a workplace, because obviously, we spend so much time in our workplace, that is true of most people in any line of work. Our workplace has additional challenges where the social interacts with the professional in many ways, because diplomacy is about traveling, getting out there, sessions that go on late, a lot of socializing, drinking.
Pendant une affectation.
Des affectations.
Oui, absolument.
S'intégrer dans une culture, oui. Faire les choses sociales de cette culture, oui. Essayer de la comprendre. Et déjà là, on a de la difficulté à comprendre nos propres cultures parfois. Alors, oui, le potentiel pour les banques de communication et des gestes ou des comportements inappropriés est encore plus élevé, je crois, ici, chez nous. Donc, vraiment, on se doit de discuter de beaucoup de sujets. Mm-hmm. La session, les dialogues, alors un des projets particuliers qui a été lancé ce mois, c'est la série AMC de dialogues sur les sujets gênants, en anglais, uncomfortable topics. Mm-hmm. Et pour cette première phase, les sujets qu'on a fait ressortir sont beaucoup des sujets qui tournent autour du mouvement MeToo, si on veut, disons les mauvaises communications qui peuvent avoir lieu sur des choses comme lorsqu'on est attiré par un collègue, et ça va arriver. Mm-hmm. And when I was thinking about this work and talking to colleagues, you know, there are so many things that happen in our department that are not bad, absolutely not. They're human, they're social, they're mm-hmm. they're normal, but they do require a certain doigté, careful,
right. Reflection.
Yes, reflection, exactly. So we know we have a lot of colleagues. So one of the topics for the uncomfortable topics dialogue is dating your colleagues. Mm-hmm. Well, my God, in this department, mm-hmm. so many. It's almost not uncomfortable because. So many of us have that situation, mm-hmm. either that we have employee couples, we even have a sort of facilitation policy for assisting employee couples who are both rotational to go out to be able to go out on a posting, because that's part of the culture of this department as well, is being able to incentivize people to go out on postings. You have to make it easy on their families. Right. Well, that's one of the logical ways, of course. But getting there, the transition points to being a couple, you know, a steady, stable couple, mm-hmm. has, you know, well, there's the early phases, mm-hmm. there's the flirting phase, there's the dating phase, mm-hmm. there's how does that affect your colleagues, people, you know, who needs to know, is there a power dynamic at mm-hmm. play, is mm-hmm. there some sort of perceived conflict of interest going mm-hmm. on, and then when the situation isn't going well, then what does that mean for your entourage and mm-hmm. for your colleagues mm-hmm. And actual breakups if mm-hmm. they happen abroad and mm-hmm. they, you know, the intersection between that reality and our workplace is very much increased. Mm-hmm. And then that's not to speak of even just delegations. So mm-hmm. when we go abroad for various meetings, a lot of that work, a lot of multilateral work, working on resolutions with international colleagues, goes late into the evenings, transfers to a dinner, alcohol is flowing, and people interact. And there's potential there for mm-hmm. misunderstandings, mm-hmm. and they happen, and mm-hmm. we know they happen. Mm-hmm. So it's instead of having it happen, not talk about it, and only acknowledge it when you're at the stage of, okay, now you've got a stable couple that you've got to try and place together, or something went really wrong, and now you have a harassment situation, mm-hmm. or worse, mm-hmm. Then, you know, there's so much we can do to just get better at bringing that out mm-hmm. and acknowledging that it's part of our reality. Mm-hmm. Having managers, a lot is asked of managers to be able to care about their team. Mm-hmm. It's funny, I recall your conversation with Louise Blais recently, mm-hmm. Which was very touching and very important. She talked about having learned for herself that she needs to manage from a place of love. Mm-hmm. That's a big statement to mm-hmm. say,
sure
I think, in this environment, mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. this, you know, A-type environment. Mm-hmm. But that's very important. What that means is bringing your whole person to work, because you do anyway. Mm-hmm. If we pretend that we're not actually bringing our emotions to work and mm-hmm. that we're just these very rational, analytical mm-hmm. Machines.
We're missing something.
Well, we're missing something yeah. and we're doomed for accidents.
Yeah. Yeah.
So managers have to be thinking about that, have to be thinking about their what they're bringing, their baggage,
right.
and then thinking about their team as individuals with their own pieces
right.
coming. And they have an extra responsibility to care about that whole. It takes, you have to think of about, you have to come outside yourself a little bit
yeah.
And try and that's a skill and it's not easy and it takes work. So we have a lot of training that's offered for that. But we have to just help each other get there.
Right.
You know, we have to just allow those things to get discussed.
Right.
And as managers, talk about them openly with our colleagues and our own bosses and not let work tensions, deadlines that may be pressing us, take up the space that mm-hmm. needs to happen
mm-hmm.
to have those kinds of healthy, holistic conversations about
yeah.
who we are as employees.
Yeah, I think that's you've covered a lot of ground in that, and that's terrific. I mean, I think one of the features, and it did come up in the conversation with Louise, is just how multifaceted our work is here in this department, and it's true in a lot of workplaces, but I think it's particularly true here by virtue of the points that you raise, like particularly in situations like postings or international negotiations or whatever, where you're spending so much time together, the difference between the professional and the personal does begin to merge. And that's just true. And, you know, the other point being that we do come to work as emotional beings and as intellectual beings, and those two things are true too. And so, you know, the one of the features of that then is you need to think about how we interact. And the conversations that you have been promoting, I think, are very important in that context. And maybe you could sort of give us a little better sense as to the nature of the les sessions concernant ces sujets, parce que c'est vraiment important pour nous.
Right. So what's really interesting is that, so we've been talking about the concept of talking more and opening it up, and there are many ways that the department tries to do that, there's formal ways. It gets a little bit more technical when you actually try to talk about designing something that will allow that, and in particular, that will reach the you know, that will not just preach to the converted, because
mm-hmm.
there's, of course, a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, we are all different individuals, and our emotional intelligence varies, just like our ability for languages and
mm-hmm.
other things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are people who are naturally more inclined to talk about these things and to raise them and to bring them in certain circles. So trying to come up with a design for something that will also help reach others and open it up. So so the dialogue series is one thing. So it's got a couple of phases to it, and it took me quite a while to develop it and help. Of course, I
mm-hmm.
talked to a lot of different people, the Foreign Service Institute and the ZIB people at Values and Ethics, and have been helping me in thinking about this.
Est-ce qu'il y était autre exemple dans autre ministère, ou quelles étaient les préconditions pour
pour cette session? J'avoue que non. Ça c'est une. Ça a commencé dans ma tête autour du premier sujet, dating your colleagues, parce que je me suis dit, ok, si je peux travailler sur le Me Too movement au ministère, dans ce ministère-là, c'est inévitable. Je
mm-hmm.
peux, je dois parler de ce sujet-là.
Mm-hmm.
C'est une bonne porte d'entrée, et évidemment, c'est un. Et j'ai imaginé au début pour moi, ok, ce qui serait bien, c'est si on pouvait tous se mettre à parler de ce sujet dans une atmosphère un peu plus relaxe. Et je nous imaginais dans un bar. Mais bon, déjà là, ça, c'est pas idéal parce que tu veux pas que ça soit trop informel. Il faut que ça ait aussi une certaine structure. Alors, ça a été vraiment par phase. J'en ai parlé en discutant avec beaucoup de personnes. Je suis très consciente de vouloir rejoindre les missions à l'étranger. Nos employés recrutés sur place font face à des défis particuliers quant aux dynamiques de pouvoir, aux questions de consentement. Évidemment, on fait face à des centaines et des centaines de différentes sous-cultures dans les missions à l'étranger. Donc, je voulais aussi pouvoir rejoindre ces gens. Donc, le design fait en sorte qu'il y a une phase où on a des conversations avec facilitateurs, et les facilitateurs sont des collègues choisis pour avoir une certaine diversité. Donc, dans chaque cas, il y a une personne un peu plus senior, une personne un peu plus junior, à l'étranger, un employé recruté sur place, un Canadien. Une personne de différents genres, donc pas deux personnes du même genre. Et en plus, on a ajouté un facilitateur professionnel dans la salle pour s'assurer que tout est fait en sécurité, que parfois des conversations peuvent déclencher des malaises ou des souvenirs chez les gens. Donc, avec une petite équipe de 3 facilitateurs dans la pièce, on est bien équipé pour pouvoir aider quelqu'un si quelqu'un doit quitter par hasard ou quelque chose comme ça. Et alors, nos facilitateurs, qui sont des employés, ont reçu une petite formation, une session de coaching sur la facilitation, et ils mènent la discussion sur les sujets, les 3 thématiques. Et ça se passe à la centrale, avec des groupes de 15 à 20 personnes, pendant une période de 90 minutes, et aussi dans certaines missions à l'étranger. On a commencé, Beijing en a déjà fait, on s'en va à Los Angeles et Buenos Aires cet été, en août, et je vais continuer en septembre-octobre à viser les autres régions. Donc, on va essayer d'en faire au moins une dizaine à l'étranger. Et alors, la discussion a lieu parmi ces gens, qui sont des gens quand même qui sont intéressés à venir. C'est sur une base complètement volontaire. On a affiché les sujets et invité les gens. Et ils viennent et ils discutent de ces sujets-là, comme fréquenter ses collègues, l'espace personnel, comment on perçoit ça, comment on accueille les gens dans notre bulle, et aussi comment parler en sécurité dans notre milieu de travail, voulant dire comment se prononcer, comment pouvoir intervenir si on voit quelque chose, un malentendu qui est en train de se créer, des choses comme ça. Alors, ces discussions-là ont lieu entre ces gens-là, et on protège l'identité des gens, c'est anonyme, c'est Chatham House, mais après, les 2 facilitateurs font entre eux un résumé de ce qu'ils ont entendu et ils enregistrent ça par vidéo. Et ils vont m'envoyer toutes ces capsules vidéo. Donc, je vais recevoir des sommaires de tous ces facilitateurs à travers le réseau qui auront... ce qu'ils font ressortir, c'est les choses surprenantes, les choses controversées, les choses... les tendances, là où ils voient qu'il y a des différences attribuables à des différences culturelles. Et tous ces résumés-là, je vais en faire un produit. Et la deuxième phase, qui est de trouver une façon d'utiliser ce produit pour aller rejoindre d'autres personnes, celles qui n'ont pas eu le temps de participer, évidemment, qui n'ont pas été assez intéressées, qui étaient trop occupées. Et aussi, par contre, ceux qui n'étaient pas attirés par ce genre de choses. So my intent is to use this video product of all the summaries from the various conversations on similar topics around our network and to bring it to the director's network, the DG's learning network, other management tables, everywhere I can take it, trainings, and make it available also for teams to just use it as a discussion starter when they have their own discussion in their own workplace. And it's interesting to see where the discussions are going. You don't want to force the discussions too much into specific areas, though, of course, the idea is that it's got to go to places where you are starting to unpack certain things like consent. Well, what does consent look like? What does it mean? How do you ask for it? What do you consent about? What I mean, you know, and around the world, I mean, these things like Beijing, who just had their dialogue on dating your colleagues, just the very topic was subject-oriented. of discussion because it wasn't a very common phrase. Dating your colleague is not something you talk about in China normally, and certain concepts that are very Canadian, perhaps, well, North American, a partner, were being discussed, and what does that mean? So I think that those kinds of, where those discussions will have gone and the issues they're bringing up, the personal space one is interestingly enough, but perhaps not surprisingly, bringing up a lot of conversations about workplace 3.0, which we're now, many people are moving to. So that's forcing a lot of contact between people that they never had before, and a kind of contact that many people did not think they would welcome in their professional environment. So that's a conversation that needs to be opened up. People have got to... there are things that can be done institutionally to sort of think about, like, guidelines for things you should or shouldn't do, and physical barriers that are being created, and new things that are being done to adapt to this reality. But people have also got, because they're being surprised by the things that bother them. And so all of a sudden, you've got to, all of a sudden, you've got to...
a situation you didn't foresee.
You never foresaw. And you say, how do I ask somebody about their chewing habits? You know, how do I broach that conversation? So everybody's got to put a little bit of their own in there and get better at this.
Oh, that's really interesting. Well, look, I mean, I think this is, it's an important project for a number of reasons. In the first place, it's innovative. I think it's really interesting as a way of kind of dealing with some of these issues in a less formal way. And we have formal mechanisms which are critically important, and you mentioned them at the outset, and those deal with problems that have arisen. But in a way, you're trying to address it before they arise. And that's a much more diffuse thing, and it's challenging in an environment where we have such a broad range of offices and all the rest, but it really is important as a topic. And I mean, it kind of leads to, you mentioned as well, making sure that some of these lessons learned get kind of fed into the networks that exist right now at the management level. And I think that's critically important. But it's also important that we think about, you know, how we address these issues more corporately, and, you know, we just had our awards ceremony, I guess, a week or so ago, and I think recognition of good people management in this context is one thing that we can do in order to try and promote a set of behaviors that we think are important, and we need to think about how we use our PMA process and the evaluation processes generally, part of talent management, to ensure that, you know, the appropriate things are being rewarded and that the inappropriate things are being addressed. And so those mechanisms exist as well for us to think about. And I must say, just purely personally, because I'm still relatively new here, I'm impressed by the rigor of our PMA process. But you can also see how it would be useful to use upward feedback in ways that would allow for a little bit more insight into the way that individuals are managing. And one of the things that was interesting for me this year was Ian Shugart, when he was still our Deputy Minister for Foreign Affairs, had instituted upward feedback for the deputies, which was terrific. And I've always found that those sorts of exercises are very helpful because, you know, it gives you an opportunity to get a little bit more of a sense as to how you are having an effect on people, or I am having an effect on people. And I think sort of mechanisms like that can be very helpful too. And so we need to think about how that works. So I think what we should do is plan on having you come back at some point and giving us a bit more of a sense as these conversations unfold as to what the sort of broader lessons are that we should be drawing from this. But merci, c'était vraiment fascinant. Et c'est, comme j'ai dit au début, c'est un processus vraiment important pour nous comme communauté. C'est une question culturelle d'adresser ce type de caractère, clairement, mais de tension entre individus dans le contexte du travail et dans les autres contextes qui sont pertinents comme, pour nous comme ministère. So thank you, Manon. It's been a real pleasure getting a chance to chat, and we'll look forward to having you back and hearing a bit more about how this as it unfolds.
Merci beaucoup. Ça me fait plaisir.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to you joining us for future episodes of The GAC Files.
Merci d'avoir écouté le balado, et nous espérons que vous vous joindrez à nous pour les épisodes futurs des dossiers d'AMC.
If you have feedback or suggestions for future topics or guests, please send us an email at xtot-ldce@international.gc.ca.
Si vous avez des commentaires ou des suggestions concernant des sujets futurs ou de nouveaux invités, veuillez nous envoyer un courriel à xtot-ldce@commercialinternational.gc.ca.